Gary V audio experience.
All right, everybody. As many of you know, listening to this podcast, I've been thinking about doing more interviews. And when I was thinking it through and thinking about who do I want to get on, who have I not been able to really chop with? Because, you know, two planes in the night, everyone's moving fast. This man came first to mind. I hit him on DM. He said, let's chop it up. And a couple of weeks later, we are here recording on a Saturday. The legend, that is really the only thing that comes to mind when I get to say it. Truly, you know, I think these days, you know, kid has one good game in high school and they call him the GOAT and I laugh. But you know, those hyperboles get thrown around. But, you know, being 45, growing up in Jersey, for me, LL Cool J is on a different status. It's exciting to kind of grow up in life when you're in the same general age and range of age because you get to watch the whole manifesto. LL, thank you so much for doing the podcast. How are you? How's your family, first of all, before we get into a bunch of different shit?
My family's well, healthy, thankfully. Having a weird Thanksgiving, had to call some close friends and tell them not this year. We had to break with tradition, which wasn't fun, but I think it was the right thing to do. We're good. You know what I mean? How's yours? Everybody good on your end?
Everybody's good. Let's go. Everyone's good. Let's go right into it because we don't have a lot of time, right? I want to get into a bunch of stuff. So I was born in the Soviet Union. And when I moved to America, we moved to Rego Park, Queens. Mm-hmm. You know, those are old stomping grounds for you. When you think about your childhood, forget about parenting dynamics, family dynamics, which are obviously number one, two, and three for most people. But I spend a lot of time thinking about environment. When I go there, when I say like things that weren't, you know, obviously your parents, your grandparents, those are life situations, but the person you're neighbors with, the first kid that you connect with in second grade, when you think about your childhood, the neighborhood, the activities of the neighborhood, or the serendipity of classmates or teachers, what comes to mind outside of immediate family of things that shaped you?
Well, what I think about my neighborhood and the way I grew up, it's a combination of a few things. This is a really complicated answer. I'm going to give you the real.
Yeah, as you can tell, I want to go into like a little bit like different stuff that I think might bring people value because there's so much on wax and video of you, and we'll go into that stuff. But I like thinking about random shit. And I was thinking about this morning. I was like, I'm just curious. Like, I think about Robbie Turnick, Eric Godfrey. I think about like, you know, Jersey culture was like very like, you know, just be outside. It was like the 80s, right? Like it wasn't video games yet. It wasn't, you know, computers and things of that nature. So I always think about how that shaped me, the randomness of my neighborhood friends. So I love those stories.
Yeah, my neighborhood was really built around, there was only one dad on my whole block. Well, there was two. It was only really two fathers in households, which was, and my grandfather, which was, that was one dynamic. The other dynamic was a lot of guys coming home from jail and shit, right? Like, so the come home from jail thing.
The fathers come from jail?
No, not fathers, but kids. Like 18, maybe my age or a few years older, coming home from jail was a lot of people always, like that was a big part of growing up. People will always come, which incredibly enough, made me want to be physically fit. Because you see guys coming home.
Jacked.
You know, jacked, benches in the yard, you know. So there was that, right? Then there was the hustlers. Mm-hmm. You know, there was the idea of, now mind you, I grew up in a house full of books, right? And my grandfather came over from Barbados and, he was a member of a Masonic lodge. He was a really kind of evolved guy. Then you go outside and it's kind of like
they're thoughtful, like a thoughtful.
He was very, very thoughtful, very, kind of knew how to give you, it's like giving a cow enough pasture. You give somebody so much freedom that they can't hurt themselves. It's like, if you have enough land, you can let your dog run wild, right? You can let your cow just go crazy because if it's safe, there's nothing. So he would give me a lot of intellectual and psychological freedom. He didn't put a lot of, you know, they didn't like handcuff me mentally, you know what I mean? Which, so that made me curious and it made me want to search. You know, I've always had a searching personality because curiosity can be passive. It could turn into wonder, or you could turn in, it could become searching.
Did you fear to let him down?
No, no, I didn't. It's funny. You know, my grandfather, when I was a kid, he used to call me a genius all the time. He said, "You're a genius. He's a genius. This kid's a genius," all the time. He said, "This kid's a genius."
You start believing it.
Huh? I don't know if I ever really believed it, but you definitely want to live up to those standards, right?
It's a lot better than being heard you're a fucking loser.
100%.
You know, so, and we both know people that grew up in those environments, and everybody listening right now, people know. And I think a lot about, you know, parenting, of how like tearing down buildings or building up buildings. And then the question is, where's the line of delusion? Mm-hmm. And do parents or grandparents create ramifications when you don't do genius shit?
I think with that part of it, the key is that you can have great aspirations, great visions, great dreams, great goals, but you also have to think strategically, but then you also have to think about tactically what you're going to do to get there. And a lot of times the reason why people have that big chasm that they can't get across is because they're not thinking about how they're going to. Now, look, you know, there's an old saying, plans get shipwrecked by the laughter of the gods, right? But a lot of times people don't have that. They don't take that step. They don't take, you know, the steps necessary to get to the greatness, to get to the high level of success, which has a lot of pain, a lot of frustration. There's fear, there's hecticness, there's nervousness, there's anxiety. You know what I mean? A lot of times people don't deal with that, right?
Yes, I mean, people want all the accolades. They don't want the shit that comes along with it, which 100%. Is why they don't get there, because they don't have the stomach for it.
100%, 100%. And so my grandmother and grandfather used to always tell me, if a task is once begun, never leave it till it's done. Be thy labor great or small, do it well or not at all. So what that did was it gave me the spirit of completion and intestinal fortitude and stick-to-itiveness, you know what I mean? Like sticking to shit.
How old were you when you thought you had a shot to do something different?
8.
Great answer. Why? Do you remember?
I just was walking around. I remember just walking in front of my house and saying, you know, just I'm 8 years old and I could do anything. And I believed it.
Who'd you look up to at that point outside of your family, your great, let's say whether grandfather or somebody, like something out there, like was music already on the radar? Oh, I know this, right? Your grandfather had some music, jazz or something, right?
Yeah, music. He was a jazz musician, mm-hmm. and he played a lot of jazz records, you know, even more than
music he was always around. But did you look up, was sports on a pedestal, acting, anybody in culture?
Yeah, you know, heroes, Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee. That's a good one. That makes sense. Your age group. That makes a lot of sense. He was huge.
He was huge. He was the man. And it was like, you know, quite frankly, he was the only guy. He wasn't white, so I could kind of relate to him. Like, I'm like, he's not black, but he ain't white. So at least he's something. He's a little tan. I can kind of go with this. You know what I mean? I can make this work. You know what I mean?
A lot of people don't realize how big those kung fu and movies were, because there wasn't cable, and those movies would play. I even remember early 80s. How old are you?
I'm 52.
So I'm 45, so 7 years old. Yeah, so so you were 14, 13, 14, 15, if I'm thinking about the era when it hit my radar, but I'm sure it was playing before then.
Yeah.
Like, they would play on like Saturday at 11 a.m. on Channel 5, you know what I mean? Yeah.
When I'm 8, 9, from age around 8, 9, 10, all the way up to maybe 15, that was all martial arts during that era. That was all like, you know, from the early 70s on up to like, you know, that was all, I was a little babe, like a baby boy. And that was all that martial art. It was like martial arts craze. It was like, you know, everybody was kung fu fighting. Yeah, you know, it was songs out. It was, so it really, but the thing about it is getting into martial arts, like my grandfather put me in martial arts. I took Sado karate. And I, years later, I took some I Ching and I took a little Wing Chun. And I,
were you good, you know, at it?
A little bit. Yeah. Growing up, my grandfather got me into it because they wanted me to They wanted it for discipline, but the real reason is because I wanted to play football and my grandmother thought football was too dangerous. So
really?
She put me in karate. Mm-hmm. So I could have a physical outlet, but not be getting my brains like shook.
Is that why you needed to act, play a football player in a movie? You needed to get that off?
Without a doubt. Yeah. Without a doubt, 100%. I had to live that out. I got to play in Dallas Stadium. I know what it feels like. I got to be out there.
Did you grow up a football fan?
Oh, 100%. I grew up a Dallas Cowboys fan.
Yeah, because they were always on TV too.
I grew up a Dallas Cowboys fan. And but then obviously as I matured, I became a Giants fan. You know what I'm saying? Once I got like it at that point where I could kind of make my own decisions, because my grandfather kind of guided me to the Cowboys. He was real funny too, because this is a guy who came from the Bronx. He's in Queens, but he likes the Yankees. So I'm watching the Yankees and everybody in my neighborhood is like Mets fans and shit. But then, you know what I mean? But then like, and they're like Jets and they're Jets fans. And I'm liking the Giants. It was crazy. You know what I mean?
The Jets and Giants, neither team made the playoffs in the 70s. So there's a lot of New York, you know, people that kind of like gravitated towards the Cowboys, the Steelers, the Raiders during that era.
Yep.
Which I never understand because I love rooting for bad teams because I love loyalty. I love neighborhood. I love eating shit. But a lot of people don't want their sports frustrating them, which I understand. Like if sports is an outlet for your life, who the fuck needs more headaches? You're trying to escape your headaches.
You're absolutely right, Gary. And I understand the loyalty. I really do. But it's just hard to be loyal to a loser.
The Jets are pressing me right now.
Yeah, I'm tired of
that. The Jets are pressing me. Let's talk about music. When does that even hit your radar as I'm going to do music?
When I started writing when I was around 11 or around 12, 11, 12. So at about 10, 11, there's all the martial arts stuff we talked about. And then there's the music, right? And hip hop is flooding the street.
Do you remember the first time you understood there was a different thing? What was it? Was it hip hop? Did they use the term rap? What was the term?
That's an interesting question. Initially, I mean, it was hip hop, but we didn't really call it that. Like it was more.
It was more
about rap music and rhyming. You know what I'm saying?
Like beatbox. I remember beatboxing.
Well, that's a human beatboxing. Yeah. But it was like rap. It was like rap. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, rapping. Yeah.
Rapping. Yes. And then rhyming as well as it got more sophisticated because, you know, the guys, you know, like guys that I got with, we all thought about like the couplets, the content, the cadence, the, you know, all of that. Yeah. And that's when it came more about rhyming.
What was the first hip hop song that hit you hard?
Well, it was some of the Cold Crush Brother routines. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't even on wax. The tapes, I was actually, because I used to go between Queens and North Babylon, you know what I'm saying, every year. Like, I lived in Queens, I lived in North Babylon, Long Island. Queens, North Babylon.
Because you were going between what?
My mother and my grandmother's.
Understood.
And so there was a lot of foster kids in the house next door to me. In North Babylon,
back and forth, or you would spend the summer, or how did you do it?
No. I would literally all of the above. I would go to school back and forth, and summers back and forth, and be back and forth during the summer, and like
hard,
like literally every other year, like you know.
And was that hard? Was that hard for you, or at the time hard, and now you're like, oh, that's why I can adjust to shit. Was it kind of just? It's all you knew and it's just, that's what it is and didn't really think twice.
Did you enjoy it?
Do you like coming back and like kind of interesting?
It wasn't even that complicated. It was just up.
It was life.
Todd's a pain in the ass. So he's going to go to Long Island this year. Up. Okay. He's good. Oh, he's been a pain in the ass. Now let's send him back to Queens.
Oh. So any time that you would move into like dangerous zone, they thought a reset.
Resets.
Interesting.
It would hit me with the reset.
Do you think now that enabled, like what if I said to you, what did you gain out of that? Maybe there's nothing, maybe there's a ton.
A lot.
I think adversity is found.
It gave me exposure, right? Because the first time I walked in a classroom in Long Island, you know, you got to remember I'm going from a school that's, I would say 99.99% black, you know, other than, you know, like, and other than my friend Richie, who's Jewish, who was like 8, 9 years old, who was my Jewish friend, everybody's black, right? I got one Jewish friend and everybody's black. And Richie
has
doesn't go to my school. Richie doesn't go to my school. Richie's my a family friend because my aunt is a school teacher and her best friend and Lynn, you know, and so me and Richie are cool. So other than Richie, it's all about, but then when I go to Long Island, I walk in the classroom, it's the exact opposite, right? Or the inverse. It's everybody's white. And I'm like the one, there's one black kid and I walk in and I'm the black kid. You know, and maybe there's another one. And it was like, I remember my eyes like, you know, jumping out of my head. But what it did was it exposed me to different people, right? Because, you know, you go to Long Island. At that time, you had a lot of Italians coming from Brooklyn, moving to Long Island. You know what I'm saying? So you're meeting. So I had like an Italian friend. And then you kind of find out also just Irish friends. But then you find out about the racial dynamics that I didn't know existed when I was in Queens, you know what I mean? So that was.
Did it come at you hard in Long Island or did it come in medium or you would say subtle because people were cool
it's
like
subtle,
that?
It's subtle, you come, you know, it's subtle. You know, two kids will be talking and you'll walk in on them and they'll be saying something they
laughing,
shouldn't be saying. And then, no, they'll be saying, you catch them saying something they should be saying and they get quiet, you know. But it wasn't like.
Atrocious.
Nah, it wasn't atrocious, man, because New York is funny
it just
like
wasn't.
That.
Yeah, I agree with
well,
you.
New York is funny in the sense that, you know, in Jersey for that matter too, right? Mm-hmm. In the sense that, yes, there's a lot of...
There's racism, but it's so...
But there's also jokes. There's also a rivalry right. And a fun... There's a... It's different in New York. You know what I mean? Like people...
I know exactly what you mean. I'm 45, 50. Like things weren't as politically correct. So there was...
Exactly.
I remember like people would make racial jokes across the board. I mean, 100%. I caught a very weird time because I was Russian when the USSR was the evil enemy. So I got real heat because we were in the Cold War, kind of like kids after 9/11 that were from the Middle East. Like Russia shot down a plane in third grade, shot down a commercial plane, and literally my class just decided not to talk to me for the week.
Wow.
Like we were the enemy. And so I don't talk about it a whole lot because it's like out of context now, people don't understand, but like 1982, 83, 84, you know, that go watch Rocky. Like Russia was like the enemy and people called me spy every day, you know, like, every day they're like, you're spying on us, you know, like, and people,
hilarious.
It's funny. People fought a lot. I think about fighting a lot. I think fighting has like is different now. Like I feel like it's extremes. It's either no fighting going on in the suburbs or that exactly, or extreme shit. And every week day I'm on Instagram seeing something that breaks my heart. But like when I was in a lot of fights. Kids were always fighting. There was a lot of fights.
Well, I grew up, you know, in the knuckle game heavy. Like, you know, that's all I did growing up. Like it was a lot of knuckle games.
You liked it?
No, I didn't like it per se, but you know, when I was younger, you know, I was slim and I had that kind of face that, you know, you want to try to test. I don't know, pretty, but you know, like they just
it's
you know,
still pretty.
Yeah, I wasn't like, you know, I didn't have that look. So
you
they
seem scary, so they thought
exactly.
They could come up on you. Yep.
So I used to have to put some of this on them. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? But
let's call it from 6 to 16, the best feeling in a fight and the worst. Like, let's talk about stories that people don't know. Like I'll give you mine. In second grade, there was a kid named Oded Weinstock who came from Israel and just decided that we were rivals. We fought three times between second and sixth grade and it culminated after school with literally 100 people watching because he caught me earlier in the day, pushed me into the locker and like got on top of me. And that was it. They broke it up. We went to detention. But at lunch, I just hear the whole lunchroom in sixth grade saying, Oded beat up Gary. And I was like, man, I can't. This can't be my reputation. We just got to junior high. And I walked up to him, literally like fucking 80s movie shit. And was like, let's fight at Marco's house. Cause that was the hill. Big shout out to Marcos. If you're watching, please email me. Marcos's house where the ice cream truck was. And literally there was hundreds of people we fought. And he was actually winning. And I would argue that I got lucky / I just refused to go down like that. He was on top of me, kind of ready to like win the fight. And I kept rocking and I got him off. And as we were both on the ground, I had the leverage and I kicked him so hard in the face, his face exploded, bleeding everywhere. We kind of both stood up off the kick and he just started crying and ran away. And for the next 48 hours was the greatest moment of my life. But earlier that morning was probably because of that micro loss, because some bullshit, we didn't even get into it, but he was definitely pushed me from behind on some sucker shit. And then he sat on top of me and they broke it up and I didn't really have any offense. So it's, what about for you? 6-16, best moment in a fight, worst moment? Because I've never had,
worst moment would probably be,
let's give somebody have a good moment. You're going to call them out and be like,
oh this dude, I had a fight with this dude, Mark. And
you know Mark's last name?
I don't know his last name.
Damn, you know what I love about the world now? If you knew his last name and you shout him out, is like his nephew being yo.
I don't know his last Mark, name. I had a fight with Mark, and he liked a girl that I was friends with. I liked her too, but I was really a friend, but I did like her. But here was the worst thing about it. Me and him, and this is the honest to God truth. Me and him were in high school. I was a freshman. We fought in the basement by ourselves. I kicked his ass, but got a mark on my face, and everybody thought he whooped my ass.
Damn.
You know, and I mean, like, I really punished this guy.
Listen, explain to me how you guys fought solo in the basement of a house.
In the basement of the high school.
Oh.
In the high school. I saw him.
So that's some real shit.
I saw him, and like, you know, we was talking, something happened, one thing, and we like went down a back step. And like, we was just down somewhere in the high school where there was people. And, you know, we got into a fight, you know, and I was kicking him in the stomach. And like, I got him, like, it was a good fight. Like, I tightened him up real nice. But however it worked out, it was like, I was punching him in his head. I didn't catch So how it worked out is.
You had a scratch.
He kind of scratched me. I had a whelp because I'm a little fast. So I had a little whelp. And then after we sitting in the principal's office because security broke it up, we down in the principal's office. I'm like, yeah. And then a dude walks in. He's like, yeah. So some another guy walks in. He's like, yo, what's up? He said, I said, yeah, man. I just had to whoop his ass. He said, you look at you. You the one with the marks on your face. And walked away. I'm like, oh, no. So the whole neighborhood, like, it was crazy. That was the craziest one.
What was the best?
The best one had to be like, this is kind of a long story and it's going to sound a little crazy, but I was in Red Lobster with my friends, right?
Yep.
And we was eating and this guy kept staring at me. So he stared at me for so long that finally I walked over his table and said, yo, you got to get out of the restaurant.
How old were you?
I might've been a little older than 16. I had to be a little older than 16, but
so
it was
already. Wait, you already were in your music?
I was already making music. Because remember, I made my first song at 16.
Well, that's why I know.
So with the guy with Mark, I was 14. I was about 14 with Mark. This one, I was a little older. I want to say 18.
So you already, I mean, because you hit fast and hard. So you were
Remember, there's no social media. It's a little different.
I remember.
You know what I mean? So you know, so I said, you got to leave, you know, and he was driving me crazy. So, you know, and maybe I was a little foul for that. So he left. He left it. I actually kicked him out of the restaurant and went back and finished my food. So then me and my friends, we driving down the block towards my house, and a guy comes and he's like trying to pull us up, get over. And he finally, like, you know, I pull over and he's like, yo, you tried to rob my friend. I'm like, rob your friend? You know what I do? Rob your friend? You think I try to rob? We ended up getting in a fight. I said, what, you want to fight? So, you know, he thought he was going to take up for his man, and he ended up catching the ass whipping.
All right, let's segue. For his man.
So that was a funny moment.
How do you think you would have done in this modern music world? SoundCloud, Instagram, knowing your personality, mm-hmm. you know, obviously you had tenacity because.
I would have done phenomenal.
I believe that.
Phenomenal.
I'm just curious how you know, because obviously.
I would have just, you know, if that was my thing, I would have just been rapping on every Instagram page and every SoundCloud, like every moment, every time you turn on the camera, you would see me doing something.
You know, it's funny. It would be a no stop. Because I believe in volume, and I talk a lot about putting out a lot of stuff, and I know a lot about your career because you were so in my pocket. You sent your your demo everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Def Jam was like, right? Like mm-hmm.
I sent it to Sugar Hill. I sent it to Enjoy. I sent it to Tommy Boy. The demo I sent to Def Jam Productions, because it wasn't a label yet. Ad Rock of the Beastie Boys heard it. He played it for Rick, and that's how I got my break. And then Def Jam, the label, was formed
after. I know, because I know that you and Beastie Boys gave them that clout to get to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true. And Rick Rubin's talent, Russell's vision.
That was gonna happen anyway. You just two happened. Yeah. So how does it feel? I think, you know, it's funny. It happened for me later. It was different timing, but I know when I'm 70, there'll be documentaries, there'll be things that talk about social media's early days. And I know I'm going to get flavor from that, you know, cause I've been, mm-hmm. you know, and so that's going to happen for me later. Hip hop, you were very young, you were early, and you're still an extremely young man now, but you know, you're getting Kennedy Awards, you're in Hall of Fame, you're real OG. And it's like, it's incredible to live and be a Hall of Famer in something that you were there early.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the scale that it's at now, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think about the NBA, like, you know, it's not that old of a league. And there's, you know, I think about Bill Russell thinking about like not sold out stadiums, you know, and that like no TV and now like what it is. Like, how does it feel to be at such a pedestal as an OG in something that is one of the most important things? Hip hop's one of the most important things in the world.
Well, I feel amazing because I, by the grace of God and hard work and the grace of God, I figured out how to keep doing what I love, right? So I didn't have to get off the train and watch it drive away. Or what, you know, watch
you
it.
Also, you also evolved.
Yeah, and that makes a big difference, right? It's not like,
sitting on the couch and saying back in 84, this is, you right. know, you mean, right. you mean it's enjoyable, but it's almost like you can't even smell that rose because you're still so active.
I'm so active and I've expanded my life to an extent that I'm still like so on the grind and so heavy and so deep in what I'm doing. You know, there's a thing called the Lindy effect, you know, and the Lindy effect is basically things that have been around will be around. So it's like Shakespeare, mm-hmm. like, you know, eating with a knife and fork, mm-hmm. Wearing a pair of pants, a baseball cap. These things have been around for a long, long, long time. And that bodes well for the future. So, you know, when I was a little kid, I always called it stretching the bubble gum and then putting another piece of bubble gum directly in the center before it pops, mm-hmm. you know? And so I just keep going after my dreams. I feel good seeing what's going on. But I feel like I'm in a position where I could, if I decide, yo, LL Cool J is coming out with an album, I know it's going to get a look. I can't tell you it's going to be a commercial success. I can't tell you, know, I can't make those kinds of predictions. I can't talk tough, but I can tell you if I say, yo, if I drop an album tomorrow, people are going to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's the best thing you could do for yourself as an artist, right?
Have you ever been in your life in the last 15 years? Because again, you've been doing incredible things in Hollywood and acting, and I'm sure a million other things we can get into. I always wonder this. At any point, because listen, I love how you answer that. You're aware that you're not in the white hot moment mm-hmm. of I'm going to put out an album and it's young boy NBA numbers. You know, like, you know.
Yeah, I know where I'm at.
Do you ever, have you ever in the last 12 or 15 years, I'm going to just use that time frame, said, have you wanted that feeling again of being in the white hottest of the hot moment, or you feel like you're fulfilled, or you were fulfilled, you went and put that attention elsewhere, and now once in a while you're like, yo, let me grab one of these fucking hot kids and do a collab with them just for one more take. You know, and by the way, I talk about this a lot. I talk to a lot of youngsters and I'm like, yo, you should do something. You know, you never, they're like, I always talk about OGs. I'm like, you should do something with Diana Ross. You should do something with Stevie Wonder. And I'm like in the south side of Atlanta in a studio and they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you never know when one of the greats is just sitting in their mansion saying, you know what? Fuck it. For 6 more months, I just want to taste again what I tasted in 89, what I tasted in 74, what I tasted in 62. I think about that shit.
Well, it's art, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I've never asked the OG. I always tell the kids, I'm like, yo, cool that you've got some heat right now, but do something that's just going to make your grandmother smile. Because I always think an OG, a legend, is, you know, if you ask 30 of them, one's ready to do it, and they're just cool to have. But I've never asked the legend on the other side. Have you in the last decade said, man, I might really want to go uncomfortably contemporary, and I might want to do something with DaBaby or Meg Thee Stallion to do that? Or does that just never cross your mind?
You know what? Like, the reality is, I would definitely consider working with a young act and with a new act. I don't see any reason to remove myself from that. I'm not like one of these OGs that sits around mad about.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. And for me, and for a lot of people listening, like, if I woke up and saw Youngboy and LL did a track, my brain would break. I think those kind of combos, like Gaga and Tony Bennett, made me smile.
Yeah. I think, look, man, like, you know, there's acts, there's all kind of cool acts out there, right? And if it's organic, and if we can find something that, like, we feel great about, that we write together, or somebody writes a chorus that we feel is in a track that really brings it out and makes it special, why not? Like, I don't need to, like, I'm not allergic to the new shit. I'm not like allergic to what's happening contemporary, what's contemporary. I'm not that's not a problem for me. Like, I enjoy listening to new acts and young artists, and, you know, like, and listen to them bridge the gap. You know what I'm saying? Like a prime example, like Meek Mill just dropped that record with Lil Durk. Mm-hmm. I'm playing that on my channel, Rock the Bells, because I think it's dope. Mm-hmm. And it's got a lot of melody in it. You know what I'm saying? It's not even like Meek is doing his normal spitting, you know, rapid fire spitting. It's real melodic. But I like the video. I like the song. I'm putting it in Breaking Bells. You know, a person, you know, so it's like, for me, whether it's, you know, from a Billie Eilish all the way to a, you know, to a DaBaby, to a Lil Baby, like with the Moment of Truth. Like, I pay attention. I love the record he did about the protests. I thought that shit was hot. I like DaBaby's performance when he was on the awards, when, you know, he was performing with the knee on his neck. Like, I pay attention to what's going on in the world and what's going on in our culture. Like, I'm not a guy that's just like sitting up in the big house, you know,
saying been there.
Disinterested, yeah. Or not, you know.
Let's talk about that on the culture. Let's talk about the technology side. When did the internet, when did you get excited, or when did it hit your radar, going way back to, you know, AOL or MySpace? When did you first kind of, not necessarily know about it, but when, maybe even Napster, given your career, like what's some early internet LL stories of, like, I thought it was bullshit. I didn't like it. I was mad at Napster. I got excited about Napster. MySpace was popping. Like, I didn't take it serious until Twitter. Like, talk to me about your last 20 years on the tech culture game.
Yeah, well, you know, for me, it was, you know, Quincy Jones gave me a book, The Road Ahead by Bill Gates, when that came out. And I guess that was in the late 90s, maybe, right before 2000, like in that window, like,
that's right.
Somewhere in there. And so that kind of piqued my interest. I thought LimeWire, you know, when LimeWire came out, I was I was really curious about that, and was like kind of trying to figure out, searching for music. I actually adopted and kind of adapted to the internet pretty quickly, in terms of the idea of it. I didn't necessarily dive in from as a user, but I was in it early, like in terms of just being comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. You know,
you didn't fear it. You didn't think it was going to fuck your money up.
No, I didn't. But, you know, at one point, the record companies did gas me up. You know, they did gas me up, and I was down there in front of Congress, like, yo, I'm not sure.
Fuck Napster.
Fuck that. Like, because I was gassed up, and, you know, understanding that they were just trying to hold on to some shit that was going to go away anyway. They was trying to hold on to a business model that was no longer viable. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
And you got to go through it.
Yeah. So
I get it.
But really quickly, I was like all the way in. And then, you know, I had a MySpace page. You know what I'm saying? I had a little MySpace page. I was into that. you know, was there early for Instagram, didn't jump on it in terms of use, but was right when Instagram started, I was there.
Are you on TikTok right now?
I do have a TikTok, but I only watch it. I don't really, I haven't done anything on it.
It's entertaining, right?
Come on, man. It's unbelievable. I know you got a TikTok. I often come down and check yours out as well. And I go on TikTok, people dancing. I saw a mother and a daughter climbing a door frame exercising to It's Tricky by Run DMC. Did you see that?
I did.
You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I'm on TikTok, which I need to get more active on it. I'm all about, like, I was on for the 5 minutes it was out. What was the one? Periscope was it? Yeah. What was it? I was on that when that for five minutes that was out. You know, all of them. Facebook, I'm on Facebook, I'm on, you know.
Talk to me about jumping around a little bit. So you break at 16. Talk to me in those first 24 months, because there's a lot of people listening right now who are destined and are gonna be big influencers. Mm-hmm. You know, 'cause the way the world works now, you know, 15 minutes game, everyone's got at least 15 fans and a hell of a lot more now, because the long tail of fame is, just like the music industry was trying to hold on, the fame game is everybody's in play.
Everybody. Yeah, you know, but it's funny, but you know, everybody's in play, but then it's about your contribution.
Period. Oh, talent and the content mm-hmm. is the punchline.
Yeah.
Like, the creative is the variable of success, but mm-hmm. everybody's got a shot in a different way now. But I was curious. I was just sitting here listening to you. I'm like, I want to be selfish. Who was the person that was real famous that you met, let's say, in the first 2 years of your fame building? Because you hit that record, came out, boom, you know, like, you got some juice. You were like one of those first 15, 20 faces, like, that really mattered in when the MTV era, you know, kind of really got going. You know, Yo MTV Rap early days, did it, like that pocket you were in, that was 50 names for sure. Who was the person you met maybe at the first award show or in studio that really like was like, oh shit, like a Michael Jackson?
No, I mean, it was Diana Ross and Michael Jackson. It was them. Like, I mean, Diana Ross was the first person to put me on television.
Is that right?
Yeah, Diana Ross had a TV special on ABC. And she gave me my first break to perform on TV.
Take me to that story. How did you find out you were going to do that show? Who called you?
You know, it was.
You remember? You know,
I think I seen her somewhere or something like that. And she was like, oh, I want you to do my show. I want you to come on and perform. And I was like, okay. And then she somehow, you know, somehow she got with the record company, and I ended up doing it. And so I
have to give time. Did you have management at that point?
Here's the funny thing about my career. I've had a couple of managers here and there, but the reality is, like, you know, Russell managed me for 5 minutes. Leo managed me for 10 minutes. My dad managed me for 15 minutes. This guy, Charles, managed me for maybe 16 minutes. But, you know, throughout that whole time, I ended up self-managing myself because in for that period, growing up in hip hop, because there was nobody who had done it before. All of the managers were either former rock managers or this type of manager, or
plus you had it in you.
Yeah, so I just kind of took the
reins. Really, like it's how I think about myself. Early on, people are like, "How are you getting on? Who's doing your PR?" I'm like, "Me."
Yeah.
Like I, knowing you enough, your entrepreneurial tendencies, the way you move, it just makes sense to me. You were capable of managing yourself. You probably secretly liked it because you liked the business side of it. And there you are.
And then, you know, ultimately, then I got with Chris Lighty at Violator. And Claudine was my day-to-day, but Chris was my manager. But we acted more like partners. May he rest in peace. We were more like, it wasn't like I was calling like, Chris, what should I do? It was more like, this is what I'm thinking. What you thinking? Mm-hmm. You know, so... Yeah, I've been, you know, I kind of been running my own show for, you know, my whole career. You know what I mean?
Being at halftime in your life,
mm-hmm.
because I think that's what people are very confused, right? Like, we've got a long way to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's at this exact second, what's the thing that's been really running through your head in the last, call it 6 months to a year, that you're like, I really want to do this?
I mean, just this Rock the Bells platform, man. Like, building this Rock the Bells platform, because this Rock the Bells platform is something that, you know, one day the youngest kid right now will be somebody that will play on Rock the Bells. Like, you know, Rock the Bells Radio and the rockthebells.com platform is not just a place for guys who started when I started and are my age now. It is a, it will keep growing. You know, we will support the Little Waynes. We, you know, one day, you know, everybody that you named will be on playing on Rock the Bells. So it's like, I just, like for me, just giving people a true rendition, an OG presenting the classic hip hop space to the world in a way that is not bitter, is not corny. We know what year it is. We're not fucking delusional. I'm just saying this is some cool shit. I want you to check it out. It's like, basically I'm taking you through my record collection and my photo album and my, you know, all the things I've been through in my life and showing, giving you some game. You know what I mean? That's what Rock the Bells is like. So that's really the thing that I've been focusing on. And then, you know, doing shows.
What about some random shit?
Because like, yeah,
like you're doing that. I'm excited about that. I'm glad people are hearing about that. I'm talking like an astronaut owning a baseball team, winning an Academy Awards thing in your pocket. Like some random ass shit. You know, one of the things that I try to really get across to people is, I know who's listening right now, is you're 31. You fucking idiot. I say it with that with all love. You think you're wrapped up. LL, you know this. People think they're done at 31. They're like, I fucked it up.
That's fucking funny.
That's why I'm glad that you're like, please everybody understand that reaction. People think at 31, like, cause they have a kid, they have a job they don't like they have a mortgage. They're like, I'm done. Like people are confused out here about age. So, you know, just knowing how alive you are at 52, to me, what I'm curious about is, you know, what's some real shit that you like think about? Like, for example, for me, ironically, you did the same thing. I know, I don't even think, I know that I'm going to make a big ass dent in film and television making shows. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think I'm going to act though. I'm not fucking scared, but you know, like, but I just know it. I genuinely think I'm going to have the number one OTT, call it Netflix, Hulu, Amazon show going. I can feel it. It's been written. I can taste that shit in my mouth, yet that's not something I'm showing a whole lot yet.
Well, it'd be like, and I'm being totally honest, Gary, you know, like, you know, when I talk about Rock the Bell, see, for most of the time when people talk about what they're doing, they're either like a fucking shill or they're just, they're promoing or they're selling or like, but you got to remember, like, this business that I'm talking about is the same thing that I did when I was 9 and started writing when I was 12. And I'm really in this. And so for me, it's like the idea that I can build something that 200-400 years from now will have the narrative of hip hop
be right
200-400 years from now. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about just making a bunch of money. I do other things. I can make money in a lot of different ways, you know, and I say that with humility. I can make money.
But it's true.
It's not only about making money. It's about building something that means something. You know what I'm saying?
Let's stay on this topic because I want to enjoy this. I want to educate some kids. How underrated is MC Light? Tell them.
Oh my God. MC Light.
Educate.
Well, MC Light was so good. The first time I heard it on the radio, I just turned the shit off because I didn't.
It made you like, fuck.
It made me uncomfortable.
No.
And I was like, that's a girl and she shouldn't sound that good. And I just had to turn it off. You know? You know? It was a bug that it was like, I just, you know, it made me like uncomfortable because she's so good. I ended up writing like her rhyme on self-destruction. We did a song, the self-destruction. Scotch tape with a razor blade taped to your collar. You know, Funky Fest, Resto Impress, Ready to Party. I wrote that for her. Like, it was like, she is like her voice, her approach. Like people should definitely dig into MC Light's catalog.
Let's keep playing this because I think it's gonna get people pumped about Rock the Bells. And honestly, I'm just now having fun. Like we're just hanging out. Give me the same. We're doing 90 seconds with LL here. We're going to play a little game. What about Heavy D and the Boys?
Heavy D, unbelievable.
Give the history lesson, like a funny story or why it's underrated or how it impacted. Play with me here.
The funniest shit about Hev, look, I love Hev, may he rest in peace. He was one of the smoothest and the best ever. The thing with Hev is, don't say a rhyme around Hev, because you might hear some shit that sounds similar next week.
Is that what, is that true? Is that not, this is what I need from you. This is amazing.
Trust me when I tell you this. Yo, and I love Hev. Hev was my dude. Hev was the best. Hev was like, yo, Hev, yo, I remember going to Hev's house in Mount Vernon. He's still in his house. He, like, the way he flipped his basement when he, after he came out with his song, like Mr. Big stuff and all that, his basement looked like James Bond should live there. It was like D, heavy D. You walk down the basement, you're like, what the? It was like a, like he took his basement to a whole other, oh my God. But Hev was a really good thing. But it was like, my man Hev and my man Flash Gordon, them two, don't say nothing around them.
It might show up on the radio the next week.
It ain't going to be what you said, but it's going to be like
it's going to be, yeah. What about Mobb Deep?
Yo, Prodigy, one of my favorite, you know, MCs in Havoc. Mobb, unbelievable. You know what I'm saying?
The t-shirt
that Prodigy's wearing in the Quiet Storm, I think it's the Quiet Storm video with Kim. I want to say it's that one. I gave him that t-shirt as a gift. Just because I was just loved them, you know what I'm saying? And I have a lot of respect for Mobb Deep. I think the way they represented Queens was unbelievable. The way they do represent Queens. We did a song on my GOAT album called Queen, Killer Queens, you know what I'm saying? And the Queens got the vets. Mm-hmm. It was dope. And the way he wrote, the way he would make things rhyme and then not rhyme, the way he would play with language, play with words. Queens get the money, long time, low cash. You know what I mean? Like, I mean,
I remember when I was like, this guy's clever. I remember using that word.
Clever, but he had a way of sounding authentically tough. That's not easy to come across. You could sound angry on a record. That's one thing. You could sound angry. You could sound aggressive. But to be able to talk, to be calm and really sound authentically tough. The only two people to me that really sound like that are Prodigy and Rakim. Where the person is not, they're not yelling, but they sound aggressive and tough.
Let's keep this Rock the Bell kind of like little fun game. I'm enjoying this a little bit for my own self. What about EPMD? These are things that I just think the youngsters don't know.
Yeah.
And our all-time classic talk, we're talking all-time classic talk right now, but I would argue underrated, which is why I love this.
Without a doubt, EPMD is a group that the kids should check out. You know, at first when they first came out, people used to tease them and say they sounded like Rakim, sounded like Eric B. Rakim. But yo, the beat selection that Eric Sermon would make, me and Parrish would always get into conversations about money and real estate and shit, and be sitting around talking about real estate. We did a record together called Rampage. It's a record called Rampage. The kids should check out EPMD Rampage, featuring LL Cool J. It's one of both of our best classics. It's dope. And they just, like, they came from Long Island. EPMD is from Long Island. So, and Rakim is from Long Island as well. Mm-hmm. He's from Wine Dance, which is right down the block from North Babylon. Like, you could literally walk down his neighborhood from where I lived in North Babylon. So it's like,
that connection.
It was a vibe. EPMD just was so official.
What about something that was like a hot minute that like just had a fever pitch to it? I'd love to get your perspective. You're in a different part of your career at this point. What about Foxy Brown's moment?
Well, I launched Foxy Brown, right? The I Shot Your record, Chris and the Trackmasters put Foxy on the record. And when I heard it, I didn't object. I was like, let her stay. Let her stay. They didn't ask. They just said, yo, listen to this. And I heard it. And I said, go ahead, let her rock. And she
was fire. Solid. That year, like, it just was like fever pitch with her.
Solid. Definitely solid. Definitely dope voice. Definitely like, you know, like tomboyish, but feminine. It was like, she had a good, she was magic. You know, she is, you know, very talented at. You know what I'm saying? But there's a lot of talented acts out there now. Like, you know, you think about a Kendrick and you think about, you know, the way he plays with rhythms with his voice. Even somebody may rest in peace like Nipsey, you know, so intelligent, you know what I'm saying? So smart, so brilliant. I know you were close with him. I saw different times you spoke with him. I mean, so that's like kind of like that mid-generation. He was very, very special. What the baby's doing now is very, very clever. You know, the
he just understands the world. Talk to me about, not to cut off, because I could talk about the baby for a hot minute, but talk to me about, I like what you said about MC Light, and I don't want to run out of time without asking you. On that same kick, what was the track, the record that you heard that literally was the biggest quantum jump for you? Like from your, you know, one man's point of view, like you heard it and you were like, oh my God. Did anything stop you in your
track? No, My Uzi Weighs a Ton by Public Enemy. My Uzi Weighs a Ton by Public
Enemy.
Do
you remember actually?
100% I remember being at, I remember shit. I'm in the parking lot of White Castle with the Jeep, with the seat leaned back with my man. And that shit came on the fucking, one of the mixes of the radio or something. And that's it. He said, you know, you know what I mean? My Uzi Weighs a Ton. Hold it now, please. Get up, get down. That shit was like, my Uzi Weighs a Ton. Hold it now. I mean, that shit was like, yo, me and my man was like, what the fuck? And here's the funny shit. Rick Rubin had just asked me a few months later, yo, I got this group in Public Enemy, you know, I'm thinking about putting out. If I could buy a song from them, would you want to perform it? And I was like, I write my own shit. And I still stand by that, but I kind of should have took that shit. That motherfucking record was so cold. Yo, when I heard My Uzi Weighs a Ton, that shit was like shape-shifting. I haven't felt that yet. Like, that shit was like, because the way the Bomb Squad, Hank Shockley, and Eric Sadler, the way him, the Chuck, and all of them, the way they worked with that, and the way they played with technology, because that was the first time that somebody really took advantage of technology, well, took it to another level. Marley did it in a different way with the sampling, but they took it to a whole other level, you know? Marley kind of, when he was doing some of those Bismarck records, those were moments too, like Make the Music with Your Mouth and Rhyming with the Bit, like Make the Music with Your Mouth and the other record, Yes, Y'all and Too, Nobody Beats the Biz. Those were kind of like quantum, they moved it, the needle, like maybe three points up, but fucking Public Enemy was like 100, you know, that shit was like, it was out of control. And I think that, look, that's what you want to do with art, right? That's what you want to do with music. That's what you want to do in your business. Like, it's just like the dude who made the 10X book, right? About 10Xing. That's what they did. They 10X'd the creative, the Sonics. They 10X'd that shit.
When you think about success, you've been around a lot of success in your life now. You know, in a lot of different genres, business, Hollywood, music, hip hop, New York, LA, the world. You know, and then all the successful people that you know that nobody knows of, whether a real estate or a lawyer or right? For the kids that are listening and the kids, I mean a 62-year-old who might've gotten motivated and said, you know what? I do have 30 more years to do something. I'm gonna go do this thing. What are the, now that you've always been a wise kid because your grandpa passed it on, you know, you probably just, you know, had that in you. What's like a wise thought around the common bonds of success? Like what are the themes that you see?
Well, first of all,
you think really stand out for you when I set up that question?
Well, the first thing I have to think is, you know, for that 62-year-old, dreams don't have deadlines. They got to understand that.
You know, that's fucking huge, man.
Colonel Sanders started Kentucky Fried Chicken when he was 65. Cornelius Vanderbilt started his railroad company at 80, right?
Sidney Frank, who started Grey Goose, was in his 70s.
Okay, so you feel me? And there's a million stories like that.
Feel you, right? I'm fucking convinced. I feel like I'm gonna drop a fucking bomb in my 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, a new bomb.
That's how I feel. You know, I'm gonna take the world and kick it in the ass and then give it a nice pat on the butt, on the back.
Like you did that kid in the basement of school. But you know what? Just like that fight you had, there's gonna be a scar in your face.
Well, that, you know, that comes with the territory. But what I would say the common themes of success are the things that you do in the valley get you to the peak, and the things that you do in the peak can either extend the peak or take you back to the valley. Right? So, you know, the peaks and valley part of it, it's very important to understand that part of it. The other thing I think is really important is being able to manage your moods. Mood management is very important because your mood a lot of times is going to dictate not only how you feel about what you're trying to do, but how you feel about yourself.
Do you feel that you stay in the middle?
That's the goal.
That's what I think. People see my energy and they're confused. I'm fucking zen as fuck out here.
Well, enthusiasm is
misunderstood.
Like, what do they call? There's the Stockdale paradox, right? I'm sure you know about the Stockdale paradox from Goodman.
No, actually, I don't know. The
Stockdale
context.
Paradox basically says, you're gonna be completely optimistic, but while confronting the brutal facts.
Yes, that's how I feel. I'm practically what I call myself is I'm practically optimistic. Like I know exactly what's happening, but I'm fucking out here and I'm not delusional. They're like, Gary, you're too optimistic. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean?
I ain't confused out here. But we can make it easy for the youngsters that's listening. I'll make it even easier. Gary, it's just like playing a basketball game. Because you down by seven don't mean you ain't enjoying yourself and into the game and playing hard.
So I watched Reggie Miller. Bro, I watched Reggie Miller make me fucking cry.
when he did that,
the game was over, but it wasn't over. And I don't understand how people don't understand how that is. And I can't get people out of this. I'm fighting out here like crazy, LL. People 18, 22, 30, 34, confused as fuck.
Well, the reason they're confused is because one, they're comparing themselves to other people too much.
Yes. Yes.
You cannot. Life is an odd thing, but the you can't treat it like it's a tournament. It's your life. And the metrics for success are different. You know, in the Bible, there's that parable of the talents, right? So one guy got one talent, one guy got a couple of talents, one guy got, four talents.
Do you think the world is abundant? That like nobody else's winnings comes from you?
100%.
That's the one. People.
It's not a zero-sum game. See, that's the other part, right?
That's why I root for winners.
100%. That's what I was telling you.
Yeah.
That's what I was telling you. I can't. So it's like, there is abundance, but you got to see it that way, right? Like you got to believe that it's out there for you, but it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because when you believe it's out there for you, you go out there and get it.
100%.
Just growing up, I would tell dudes like, yo, I'm gonna be where running them is at, or I'm gonna get, and they'd be like, come on, man, ain't nothing out here for, look where they at, man, look where we at. Fuck that.
Yeah, the game, listen, if you think it's over, it is actually over. It is real. It's over because your older brother or sister aren't winning and they told you, or your parents, or the neighborhood, or your cousin, or somebody on the internet. If you think it's over, I got some real news for you. It actually is over.
And you know what? To really make it simple, the bottom line is you have to believe in yourself and believe in the beauty of your dreams. And you take a deep breath and go for it.
Have you seen people who had the unfortunate situation of not believing in themselves because their parents got them
100%,
turn 100%, themselves out and start
100%,
to believe?
But you know what? You know, like, that's a matter of getting out of your comfort zone, right? If your comfort zone, unfortunately, if the word is unlucky or whatever word you want to use, if your comfort zone is, I would say, a place where your default setting is a place of failure, then you have to be able to get out of that comfort zone.
Do you think spending time with people that are cheering for you can make that happen?
I think that can be part of it, but the other part of it is you have to be doing the work that makes that cheering realistic. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you could cheer for me, like I could be stretching my legs standing next to Usain Bolt, and you could be cheering for me all you want, Gary. But the reality is, he's gonna smoke my ass when we get on that track.
Oh, 100%.
So, you know what I mean? So one, it's about being realistic about what you're trying to accomplish. And then two, yes, you wanna be surrounded by people who aren't downers. Like, you know, I remember when my, when Simone was, she was going through her, she had a bout with cancer in her leg, and she needed to beat the cancer. A lady came to our house, right, to visit. And I just brought Simone home from the hospital. Lady came to my house and she walks in my foyer. She's crying and shit. I said, you gotta go.
Get the fuck out of here.
You gotta go. She was like, she was an older lady. Like, she was like 10 years old. Yeah, you got to go.
Surround with offense.
You know what I mean? So I know what you're crying and shit with all that. That's not helping. All that boohoo shit, you know, that harbors other kinds of emotions. You're full of shit. Go ahead. Like, you know, you got to deal with your shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so you're bringing that on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would tell people, look, just stay encouraged and believe in yourself. Damn. And if you look, Michael Jordan didn't make every shot. LeBron didn't make every shot. Look how many championships LeBron didn't win. But he didn't stop trying. And that's why he's phenomenal now. That's why he's a man that we can respect and a guy that we can look at as an icon, because he didn't give up.
And change the script.
Yes.
We're using somebody who's iconic, and you know, what about just looking at life differently? Maybe you're not destined to be a tremendous accumulator of money, but maybe you can be a tremendous human being to others.
Can I say something to that, Gary?
Of course you can.
People got to understand is that what it really is about is knowing your value. It's not about money only, right? Like, everybody has their place. Madonna didn't make the same money that Zuckerberg did. She still made a contribution to the world through her art. You and I
grew up around neighborhoods where the old man on the block was the wise one who helped a lot of kids not get into dumb shit, who only made $27,000 a year, but their contribution was 100%. They genuinely helped 2,700 people have a better life. And to me, that's where people get fucked up. They look at the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, and then they're like confused out here. Like,
the thing I think with people don't understand is that if you really know your value and if you always look to make a contribution, success is gonna come. It's gonna come. And however that comes, you know, look, I always tease like a lot of my rich friends. And when I say rich friends, people hear me say that and they're like, well, what's rich? But I'm talking about like guys that are way like 100x times richer than me. It's like, dude, a lazy boy, what can you really do beyond your chair and your remote? Like, you ain't doing shit. Only difference is you got a plane. But other than that, you got the remote and you're doing this and you got your lazy boy and you're eating. So it's not that complicated. People shouldn't get caught up in only money, 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 money. You're a valuable human being regardless of that.
What's the impact you're making?
What's
the impact? And what makes you impact. And what makes you happy? Like, bro, I swear to God, I literally today, because it's Saturday, said, man, I can't wait to go garage sailing.
Yeah, I know that you're into that. I love
that.
You know what I do? You know what my pastime is? Books, right?
I love that, which is like so foreign to me because I realize I don't have reading comprehension.
I love books.
Good for you. Like,
I'm like,
you can really get down to read a fucking book, huh?
Like, I read, like, dude, that's all I do. I when I work out, I play audio books and have music underneath it. Like,
damn.
Like, I'm like a book guy. Like, every house I have, every spot, like, there's books everywhere. Like, I'm just always into books. Like, books is like, my idea of an unbelievable day is just to have a hoodie on low-key and just be fucking walking around at Barnes & Noble, like, just staring at books. Even though I got audio books and I got a Kindle and I got all that shit, but I'm just saying, like, I like books. Like, I'm actually, like I name myself LL Cool J because I'm a fucking nerd.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, books is the thing that turns me on. Like, that's my shit.
That's an incredible way to end this because I got to run. I apologize. Thank you so much, Al, for your time.
Love.
If you did not listen to that last minute and understand everything can be wrapped up in it, if you understand yourself and you have self-awareness and you don't understand that there's a million ways to play it out here,
mm-hmm.
this man right here, winning, impacting, happiness, this man probably read more books in the last week than I've read in my life.
I don't know how many, but I read a lot, though.
Bro, I've read like 8 books in my life.
But you know what I also do, Larry? I'll take one book and read it over and over for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, see, listen,
it's like getting a black belt in the book.
I get it. Everybody, listen, everybody does it different. Here's the bottom line. Figure your shit out how you do it. There's a million ways to slice it. You and I slice it different. We have commonalities. We have differences. Just love yourself, and then you can love everybody else. L, thank you so much, bro.
Peace. Faith in God. Love you, man. Love you, G. Peace.
All right, episode's over. Please leave a review and subscribe up on Apple. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you very much.
Hey, podcast. Joe from Team Gary here. Today's highlighted review is Great Show by Lawrence Coletti. I really enjoyed the latest episode, Being a True Entrepreneur. Love the honesty and the insights. Thanks, Gary. Thanks to Lawrence Coletti. Keep those reviews coming. We could highlight yours next.